Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show where we explore the golden path of transformation and aim to mine a few nuggets that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, no matter how contrary that might seem. Like a nightingale, the bird that sings out in the dark. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm JJ, also known as the Practical Alchemist, and I have another great guest with me today to talk about a serious but often somewhat neglected health issue for women. It's endometriosis. Did you know that we're currently in Endometriosis Awareness Month? Well, we are. And my guest today is the perfect person to make us all more aware of this condition and how to treat it. She is Dr. Ghazala Aziz Scott, director of the Marion Gluck Clinic in London and a specialist in integrative women's health as well as bioidentical hormone balancing. We had what was for me an eye-opening conversation about endometriosis when we got together, all about the causes and how to treat it holistically. But first, I asked Dr. Ghazala to explain exactly what endometriosis is.
So endometriosis is when you have tissue that lines the inside of the womb, so it's called the endometriotic lining. You have bits of that tissue in locations other than the inside of the womb. So when you think about our monthly period, and you know that's the shedding of the lining of the womb, the endometrium, if you've got deposits of that tissue in other sites of the body, so in the ovaries or in the peritoneal cavity or on the gut, you will find, or in the cervix, if those bits of tissue bleed, obviously they don't have an outlet. They don't come out through the vaginal canal onto your sanitary protection. They cause localized inflammation in those areas of the body. So it's a very common condition. About 1 in 10 women and women who are assigned female at birth can have endometriosis, and it affects 190 million women worldwide.
Now, it's extraordinary.
Yeah. I know. So we often think of the menstrual cycle as a barometer of your health. So if you have a regular menstrual cycle without too much pain, it means that you are in good health. Having pain that is more than a couple of paracetamol when your period starts, having pain with your menstrual cycle is not normal. And this is a myth that I'd really like to dispel, that, you know, periods are not supposed to be painful. If they are painful, then there's something going on and you need to get some advice from someone about what could be causing that.
And what could be causing it? There's my next question. What are the causes? And I talk, by the way, as somebody who no longer has periods, but when I did, and especially when I was much younger, had the most painful periods you could ever imagine.
So one endometriosis is one of the major causes of painful periods, you know. And I mean, we've got to sort of think about, what does pain mean? Taking a couple of paracetamol before you have your period, you know, that's probably normal because there are certain inflammatory chemicals released at the time of your period. They're called prostaglandins. Yeah. So they can cause a bit of inflammation, and that inflammation can be painful. So a couple of paracetamol or ibuprofen can stop those, you know, numb those prostaglandins down and make the symptoms comfortable. But when you've got pain such that you're needing extreme amounts of analgesia, or it's affecting your quality of life when you can't actually go to work, you have to stay in bed, you can't go to school, that is severe period pain that needs investigation. So endometriosis is one of the most common conditions that causes severe painful periods. There are other things that could cause period pain. So some of those things are, if you've got a lot of inflammation, if you've got polycystic ovaries, if you've got hormonal imbalances, these are the sorts of things that might predispose, or if you're under a lot of stress, when you're very, very stressed, our cortisol, which is our stress hormone, causes more inflammation in the body. So you're more likely to get pain when you're having a normal inflammatory process when you're having a period. So those are the sorts of things that might increase your pain threshold for your periods. But endometriosis is definitely the most common cause of very severe painful periods. Now, with endometriosis, the pain can often start a few days before your period is due. So if you think about those pesky little endometrial deposits in other parts of your pelvic cavity, they start getting stimulated by the hormonal changes in the menstrual cycle that bring a period on, but they're already starting to be stimulated and they're starting to bleed internally. And that bleeding causes inflammation. And in the long run, if those deposits constantly bleed, it causes scar tissue and adhesions. So adhesions are when bits of, your scar tissue stick together and form adhesions. So that is what causes the pain of endometriosis.
And that's what causes the pain, but then what causes the endometriosis in the first place? That's always been a mystery to me because nobody's ever explained it to me.
Well, when we're thinking of why is it that people have got those deposits of endometrial tissue in areas outside the lining of the womb. So there's something called retrograde menstruation. So we think of, it should be a one-way stream. It should be the lining of the womb flows out through the vaginal canal onto your sanitary protection, and that's the period. However, there are women who get what we call retrograde menstruation. So the lining of the endometrium, instead of coming downward, goes up through the fallopian tubes, out through into the peritoneal cavity. So it can go in a reverse direction. And so if you get bits of the endometrial lining going into the peritoneal cavity, that causes an inflammatory response. That can cause the beginnings of endometriosis. We also know that certain peritoneal cells, so the peritoneum is, the pelvic cavity, the lining of the pelvic cavity, there are certain cells in the peritoneal cavity that can change to become endometrial cells. So there can be certain stimulations like toxic chemicals and bacteria that can cause those peritoneal cells to change into endometriotic cells, which then form deposits that get stimulated by our hormones. Now, you also get some spread of these endometrial deposits via the lymphatic system or through your bloodstream. But we know a lot of women get retrograde menstruation. And in fact, retrograde menstruation might be quite a common occurrence, but not everybody gets endometriosis. So there are lots of other factors in play that make someone more prone to getting endometriosis. And one of those things is immune dysregulation. So for women who have got immune systems that are not working as well, they can't target those cells that are in locations they shouldn't be in. Normally, if you've got an active immune system and you get an endometrial cell flowing out through the fallopian tube into your peritoneal lining, you've got lots of cells, immune cells, you've got these natural killer cells. They're like the army, and they go in and they eat up those endometrial cells, and the immune system sort of down regulates those foreign cells that are coming out. But if your immune system's not working properly, then it's much more likely that those endometrial cells will stick onto places in the peritoneal cavity or on the ovaries or on the cervix, they'll stick on other locations, and then they'll start proliferating. So estrogen is a hormone that we produce in our menstrual cycle, and estrogen causes proliferation of endometrial cells. So in a normal menstrual cycle, in the first half of your menstrual cycle, estrogen levels go up. When estrogen levels go up, it stimulates the endometrial lining in your womb, and it gets ready to become thicker, ready for ovulation. And what your body's hoping is that when you ovulate, the egg is fertilized, and then that nice juicy lining forms a nice little home for that fertilized embryo, and Bob's your uncle, we have a baby. However, if there is no fertilization, then that lining of the womb becomes redundant, and then in the second half of your cycles, progesterone levels rise. And when progesterone levels rise, they're trying to keep the endometrial lining stable for this fertilized embryo. But if there's no fertilized embryo, the progesterone levels fall. And when the progesterone levels fall, that drop in those hormones causes us to have a period. So our normal menstrual cycle results in the endometrial lining thickening and shedding. hopefully in response, hopefully providing the right environment for fertilization. However, we don't have a baby every month, so most of the time the lining is redundant and it's passed. So if you think of those little bits of tissue all over your pelvis that shouldn't be there, there's nowhere for them to go. So they get stimulated in the same way, but then when those deposits bleed, there is nowhere for that blood to go. So it ends up causing a localized inflammation. And you can think of it like a scab. There's lots of
Yeah.
these scabs all over
Yeah.
the peritoneal cavity.
Yeah. So that's the way the hormones work. Is there any other issue that can cause a problem and
Well,
cause us to have
there's
endometriosis?
different, as I said, there's lots of people can have predispositions to
Yeah.
endometriosis. So there's a genetic element. If
Okay.
you look at twin studies, there's about a 50% chance that if one twin has it, the other twin will have it.
Right.
So there's a
Okay.
definite genetic element to it. There's also environmental factors. So we know that there are lots of things in the environment that disrupt our hormone balance in the modern
Yeah.
world. So there are things that are called endocrine disrupting chemicals, and they're all over the environment. They're in plastics, they're in dry cleaning fluids, they're in flame retardants, they're in personal care products. There's phthalates, which are in personal care products. So we're really living in a toxic soup. And a
Yeah.
lot of these things have quite similar structures to our hormones, so actually will then disrupt our own natural hormone balance. Nutrition plays a massive role in the health of our body. If we're eating in a way that does not that is not anti-inflammatory, that we're eating all the wrong types of foods, if we're eating lots of ultra-processed foods, our bodies become inflamed. And then if our bodies become inflamed, if you've got endometriosis, the inflammation of that endometriosis is going to become worse. So if we can stop that process and damp down the inflammation in our bodies due to, eating a poor diet, that will improve your endometriosis overall. Lifestyle factors, so stress, how do we manage stress? Are we exercising properly? Are we doing the right form of exercise? Are we sleeping properly? Do we have healthy relationships? All of these lifestyle factors also have an impact on endometriosis. Alcohol consumption, smoking produces toxins which make endometriosis worse. But also hormonal factors that are to do with each individual person. So some women are prone to being what we call estrogen dominant. So they produce a lot more estrogen in their body. So if you think about what we've talked about earlier is that estrogen stimulates the endometrial lining. If you've got a lot of excess estrogen, then you're going to get more stimulation of that, of those endometrial deposits. So your symptoms of the endometriosis are going to be worse. And things that cause estrogen dominance are people who are overweight. Stress can cause it. There are certain genetic predispositions where some women make more estrogen than others. Now, we make estrogen every day, but we also have to clear that estrogen from our body. And we clear estrogen from our body through our livers and through our gut. So if your liver is not too healthy, if you're drinking a lot of alcohol, or if your gut's not healthy for whatever reason, then you're not clearing the estrogen from your body. So estrogen then builds up in your system. And those are the different causes of estrogen dominance. So when we're assessing someone in clinic, we will be looking at, well, is that person estrogen dominant? And if they're estrogen dominant, why are they estrogen dominant? And what
Yeah.
can we do about it?
Yeah.
The other thing some women with endometriosis will have is this thing called progesterone resistance. So estrogen stimulates the endometrial lining to proliferate and grow and become thick and juicy, and progesterone stimulates it to shed. So if you've got somebody who's got progesterone resistance, which means they're not responding to progesterone as well as they should, then that means that endometrial lining carries on proliferating, and there's not the brakes. Progesterone is the brakes, so the brakes have failed, and therefore the effects of the estrogen are going to be much more dominant, and therefore the endometriosis symptoms are going to be worse. So those are the
Right.
sorts of things that are other factors that might predispose you to endometriosis.
Well, I mean, I have to say that I know a lot more about endometriosis now than I have ever known. And that despite the fact that I was being checked out for it when I was a lot younger. Now, when I was younger, they gave me a laparoscopy. So, a small tube going in through a small incision. It's quite an invasive process. It's not that bad, but it is quite invasive. Now, I'd love to know, have things changed in the past, however many decades? How do you diagnose endometriosis now? I mean, we've heard a lot of fascinating information about the causes or the potential causes or the environment in which endometriosis can proliferate, if I can say that word. And so what I'm fascinated by now is, how do you know whether somebody has it or not?
So, I mean, number one, from the history. So if they are getting, they've been having painful periods, they've been having pain before the period starts, if they've got other symptoms, so painful periods, painful urination or painful bowel movements during a period, because sometimes you've got these endometrial deposits in the bladder or the bowel. Yeah. If there's a change in bowel habit, if they've got heavy periods, if there's a history of infertility. So very often, sometimes for some women, endometriosis can be silent and, you know, it's not really manifesting. But it's when they are trying to have a baby, they realize that, you know, they've got fertility issues, and then they're investigated with a laparoscopy. Dyspareunia, so painful sexual intercourse. Sometimes those pelvic deposits and inflammatory deposits, when, you know, will cause pain during sex. Sometimes people feel just incredibly tired. There's a high tendency for people to become depressed and anxious over having endometriosis. Number one, because very often people are not heard. You know, people are women assume that period pain is normal. There's a lot of gaslighting. People are like, there's nothing wrong with you, just take some paracetamol, off you go. So every month people are filled with this absolute dread. Oh my God, I've got my period and I'm going to have this horrendous pain. I'm not going to be able to get out of bed. I'm not going to be able to go to work or school. So it's every 3 weeks. So it's actually quite a lot to deal with. And given that it takes 8 years for someone to be diagnosed with endometriosis, that's a lot of painful periods that you've had.
That's an awful long time.
It's an awful long time. Now, one of the issues is, you know, pain has been normalized as part of the menstrual cycle. Number two, you know, women's health isn't taken as seriously as it should be. Number three, we're talking about what is the definitive diagnosis used to be. Laparoscopy. Now, laparoscopy is when we make a little incision near the belly button and you put a little telescope in, a fine telescope in, and the gynecologist is able to look around the pelvic cavity and see if there are any deposits of endometrial tissue. Because if you do an ultrasound, you can't see those deposits. So they're seen very clearly on a laparoscope. And it used to be the definitive form of diagnosis. And one of the benefits of having the laparoscopy is they can put a little device up there and they can actually they can use a laser to zap some of those endometrial deposits. In terms of diagnosis, now there are more sophisticated MRI scans with contrast that can show endometriosis. But usually those MRI scans show endometriosis at a very advanced stage. So they're there's four different stages of endometriosis. So in stage one, you have a few little superficial lesions. In stage two, you've got a lot of lesions and they're more deeply implanted. In stage three, you've got these deep lesions and you've got small cysts on the ovaries and some fine adhesions. And in stage four, you've got deep adhesions, you've got large ovarian cysts, which are called chocolate cysts because they're filled with blood. And you have dense adhesions, and these dense adhesions can cause a lot of pain. These adhesions can tether different tissues together. So you can, your uterus and your gut can be, bits of your gut can be stuck together. And obviously they're going to cause a lot of pain.
Yeah. It really is painful, but we'll hear a lot more about how to deal with it much later. First, it's time to hear from our station sponsors. Back with more from Dr. Ghazala right after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Alchemy 101 with me, JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest this Endometriosis Awareness Month, Dr. Ghazala Aziz Scott. Now, a lot of women will have heard all the horror stories about endometriosis, stories about surgery, hysterectomy even. But that doesn't have to be the outcome. Here's Dr. Ghazala again.
Well, there's a number one, we've talked about the delay in diagnosis, but yeah. Once it's been diagnosed, how do you manage it? So conventional treatment strategies are, number one, the pill. So it's like, well, let's put you on the pill. Now, the thing about what the pill does is it switches off ovulation, it switches off the menstrual cycle, and it creates an artificial menstrual cycle. Now, for some women, it can be helpful, but it's not looking at the root causes. You're not looking at, why has this person got the hormonal imbalances? Why are they inflamed? Yeah. Why are they prone to getting endometriosis? You're just going, let's just put a sticking plaster over it.
Yes. Yeah.
But then when they want to have children, they come off the pill, then what are they going to do? And also nowadays, we also know that being on pill long term is not good for you either. So it's a very common way of dealing with painful periods is switch it off. But it's not really looking at the deeper causes of what might be causing the problem. Another thing that they can use is this thing called a GnRH analog, which is an injection that basically switches off the stimulating hormones from your brain. That's FSH and LH that stimulate your ovaries to ovulate. So those hormones are switched off and you're kind of put into this kind of menopausal state where you're not having any periods. And so therefore, there's no stimulation of the endometrial lining. There's no stimulation of those endometrial deposits. For some women, that can be effective. But again, you know, what when you want to have a baby, when you don't want to be on those medications. Now, our natural hormones in our menstrual cycle actually incredibly important, but we need those to be in balance. So when those hormones are in a nice balance, it's very good for our body. You know, we need estrogen, we need progesterone, we need testosterone, we need all of these hormones. But when they're imbalanced, then we can obviously run into problems. But switching them off altogether, which is what the pill and these GnRH analogs do, is not, in my mind, the right solution. Now, you can also use synthetic progesterones. So in the conventional world, so these progesterones will actually make the lining of the womb thinner. And they'll make the endometrial deposits smaller. So giving people progesterone can sometimes be helpful. A lot of people tackle it through pain medication. It's like, okay, you have a painful period every month, have a whole pile of painkillers. But we know that a lot of people with endometriosis have like a chronic pain condition. And chronic pain conditions do not respond to just paracetamol and ibuprofen. You know, they need a much more detailed approach. And may need other forms of analgesics. But certainly finding the root cause is actually very, very important. And then when all of those conventional things, which we're just pointing out, have got their drawbacks, when they fail, it's like, well, let's whip it all out then. So let's you know, have a hysterectomy and have your ovaries removed. Some people who've got stage 4 endometriosis, where they've got those adhesions that are sticking their uterus and their bowel together, they've actually got to have bowel resections. So there are people who, you know, with severe endometriosis that have to have bowel resections. There are people whose ureters, which are the tubes that connect the kidneys to the bladder, the endometrial deposits cause blockages in the ureters. So sometimes stents need to be put in those. Gosh. We're talking about extreme situations.
Yes.
Where people have got stage 4 endometriosis, but I've seen it, you know, it does happen. And I've seen people who've had those complex surgeries for severe endometriosis. Now, if that endometriosis has been picked up much earlier on and been properly managed, it may be that we can avoid a lot of those complications going forward.
See, all these things are really adding to the fear that I think women have about endometriosis, but they needn't have this fear, need they? And it doesn't affect you necessarily having children, if that's what you want to do. For a lot of women, because of the gaslighting, because of the time it takes to get a diagnosis, there is this really deep-seated fear about endometriosis and actually not really understanding what it is and what causes it. So I'm really grateful to you right now for spelling out what the various issues are that come together with endometriosis. Now, say I have been diagnosed with endometriosis. It's not too bad. It hasn't got too far. What are the things that you would be looking to, and what would be the things that could help me if not manage it, if not cure it as such, but manage it. So I did Google endometriosis just to see what came up before we did this interview. The idea was that it's something that you just have and you have to manage. You don't get rid of it. Is that true?
No. I mean, I think, you know, there was a very good article in the British Medical Journal. It was a state-of-the-art review of endometriosis, and it was done by a Professor Horn from Edinburgh and a Professor Misma from Harvard. And so they looked at all the data surrounding endometriosis, and they concluded that endometriosis is a multi-system disease and that you need a personalized, multimodal and interdisciplinary approach, which means you've got to look at each person as an individual. This is where personalized medicine is really important. And there may be lots of different things that you need to look at. That person might need some gynecological support. They might need to see a gynecologist for, you know, a laparoscopy or certain procedures, but they also benefit hugely from seeing an integrative medical doctor like myself, because I will look at, well, what is causing their endometriosis and what is driving their disease to manifest itself as it is. And we know that women who've got endometriosis, they're much more likely to have autoimmune conditions, they're much more likely to have cancer, they're much more likely to have a higher cardiovascular risk. So it's really important to have this whole body approach. Now, we can't prevent you from having it, but if we make you more aware and whether you have an earlier diagnosis, we can halt or slow the natural progression and we can decrease these associated illnesses with it. Because, you know, recurrence of symptoms, you know, even when people have had surgery, is so high. So what I would do in the clinic, you know, I have a functional medicine approach. I would see someone for 75 minutes. So we go through absolutely everything about their history, everything about their menstrual cycle, what treatments they've had already. I'll be looking at other aspects of their health. What other illnesses have they had? What medications are they on? What supplements are they taking? What's their family history? What's their personal history? What job are they doing? What's their nutrition, their lifestyle? How are they managing stress? So we're looking at this big picture of all of their medical problems and their lifestyle issues and their genetics and family history. So we're looking at all of that. And then we use that information to decide what sort of tests do we need to do to evaluate this person further. So I would then do a big set of blood tests where I'm looking at someone's metabolic health, I'm looking at their hormonal health. So when we're talking about metabolic health, we're looking at, you know, have they got diabetes? Do they regulate their blood sugar properly? You know, because if you've got diabetes and you're not regulating your blood sugar properly, or you've got pre-diabetes, you're more likely to be inflamed. If you're overweight, you're more likely to be inflamed. We're looking at people's hormonal balances. Are they having ovulatory cycles? Are they producing progesterone? Are they producing too much estrogen? So we'll look at all of that. We look at levels of different micronutrients that can be really helpful in supporting endometriosis. So things like magnesium, B vitamins, vitamin D, all of these things are quite important in our overall hormonal health. Then there's some specific functional medicine tests that we do. So we can look at someone's adrenal axis. So that is, what is the pattern of stress hormones? Now, a really important thing I want to highlight is that a lot of patients I see in the functional medicine space who've got severe endometriosis often have a history of childhood trauma. So people who've had a lot of what we call ACEs, so adverse childhood events, are much more likely to present with endometriosis. And the severity of the abuse is proportional to the severity of the endometriosis.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. Yeah,
it's fascinating, isn't it? Because the way when we're a child and we're experiencing abuse, it dysregulates our stress hormones. And when we have a dysregulation of the stress hormones, it dysregulates our immune system. It dysregulates we're much more likely to be inflamed. So all of those root causes of endometriosis that I've talked about, which are hormonal imbalances, inflammation, those are much more marked in someone who's had childhood trauma. So you're much more likely to manifest endometriosis if you've had that history. So again, being able to look at someone's stress hormone patterns, speak to them about their early childhood history, have they had any trauma or abuse? It gives you a much bigger picture of what actually has driven these hormonal imbalances that this person is experiencing. The other test that we do is a functional gut test. So it's very important to understand the role of the gut microbiome in the development of endometriosis. So the microbiome is the collection of all the different bacteria we have in our gut. Now, we've got more bacteria in our gut than we have cells in our body. So
Yes, I
this
know. I love
leads
that.
to
I love
the
that statistic, you know. I think
yeah.
that I think that's
So all of these
fantastic.
bacteria in our gut, they're the balance of the different populations is very, very important for lots of metabolic processes. And it's very easy to make those bacteria become imbalanced. So if you've got an unhealthy diet, if you've got a lot of inflammation, if you're exposed to infections, if you're exposed to antibiotics, all of these things can have an impact on your gut microbiome. Now, the gut microbiome is important for the integrity of the lining of the gut. So the lining of the gut is one cell thick, and these the cells that make up the gut lining, they have these little tight junctions between them, and the whole thing sort of holds steady and keeps everything as it should. Now, when you've got any kind of dysbiosis where bacterial populations are imbalanced, this can cause production of certain toxins which can disrupt these tight junctions, and the little cells that line your gut become leaky. This is called leaky gut. So it means that when we take in toxins, or we've got certain foods that we're taking in, those different things that are actual foreign to our body and usually pass through us actually go into the bloodstream via these little holes in the gut, the leaky gut, and then they cause an immune response. So you get toxins and food particles causing an immune reaction in the bloodstream because of this leaky gut, and that means that our bodies become much more inflamed. People who've got endometriosis very often will have gut dysbiosis that is driving their immune imbalances, their inflammation that is causing this endometriosis. So we do quite a lot of different testing. We can also look at people's genetics, what are the factors in their genetics that are making them more prone to producing more estrogen, making them more prone to not clear that estrogen from their body, making them more prone to inflammation, making them more prone to oxidative stress. So we can look at these individual factors in someone's genetics that might be contributing to their endometriosis.
Well, I can't say I'm surprised to hear about the gut connection because the gut seems to be so important for so many things in our body. But I really wasn't expecting to hear the connection to abuse. This really is a far more complex issue than we're generally led to believe. Well, time for another break right now, but Dr. Ghazala will be back with more right after more messages from our sponsors.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station. I'm JJ, the practical alchemist, and my guest today is Dr. Ghazala Aziz Scott, offering us more awareness about endometriosis. Here's Dr. Ghazala again with her advice on what to do if you think you might have endometriosis.
So there are all of these things that we will look at to see, well, what is driving this person's endometriosis and what can we do about it? And when we talk about integrative medicine, it's not sort of, quackery and all alternative medicine. Integrative medicine means we use whatever disciplines we need to use to get that patient better. So if that patient has
Absolutely.
got end stage endometriosis and needs surgery, they need surgery. But I'm hoping we catch them at earlier stages where this approach can actually prevent the progression of their disease. But obviously, if I'm working with someone who's needs surgery, they need the surgery. But then after they've had the surgery, to prevent that endometriosis recurring, We can still work with them in an integrative way to help reduce that inflammatory process, to balance their hormones, to help support all of those processes that are driving the disease in the first place.
And when you talk about needing surgery, it doesn't mean to say that that's automatically a hysterectomy. It may be something completely different. So what are the questions that people should ask their GPs? I mean, when you go to see your GP here in the UK anyway, certainly, and in other countries as well, I guess you would go to see your doctor and say, I've got this terrible pain, or, you know, or maybe you think you have endometriosis. What are the things you should ask your doctor when you go
I
to
think
see them?
If you've got severe period pain that's happening absolutely every month, not responding to painkillers, it's affecting your quality of life, and it does not feel like regular period pain, you know, where regular period pain, you know, you need a couple of paracetamol on day one of your period, and that's about it. You know, you might need a bit of analgesia, but more or less you can go to school, you can go to work, you know, you feel a bit, you know, under
you
the
can
weather,
function.
but you're
Yeah.
fine, you can function. If it's at that point where you're not functioning and it's severe every single month, you should go to your GP and say, you know, can I be referred to the gynecologist? The thing is, a lot of GPs, rather than refer you, will just maybe, you know, put you on the pill or something like that. That's the, you know, painful periods, put them on the pill. That's like a reflex reaction without
It
thinking
is,
of,
yeah.
well, what could be causing that heavy, you know, what could be causing that period. I mean, I guess it takes. Thing is, it takes quite a lot of time and energy to actually ask all of those questions, which makes you think, oh, this person could have endometriosis. Most GPs will think, okay, painful periods, put them on the pill, give them some painkillers. They won't be, they don't have the time to
No,
be going, have you
exactly.
got a change in your bowel habit? Have you got this? Have you got that? All the things that might start making you think, oh, this person might have endometriosis. Also, you might have to see them a few times before you come to that conclusion. You might say, okay, I want you to keep a symptom diary. I want you to track your periods. I want you to tell me exactly when you're getting your pain. What are your symptoms? What did you take to relieve your symptoms? Did it work? Did it not work? Et cetera, et cetera. So you need to take quite a detailed history and give a bit of time and energy to the situation, which, you know, unfortunately, in our very pressured NHS, most people don't have the time for it.
No, that is true. So is there something that people can do for themselves? You're talking about keeping a diary.
Yes, I think you can track your symptoms. Nowadays, there's all kinds of, you know, apps you can get on your phone. There's the Flow app that you can track your periods, you can add the symptoms, you can, you know, how heavy is your period, how long does it last, et cetera, et cetera. So you can come up with a bit of data. But I think, you know, it's really important to advocate for yourself, you know, and if you think, you know, through your own research and through keeping a symptom diary that you've got endometriosis, you've got to shout out and make sure you're taken seriously, you know. And, you know, if you think you've got endometriosis, I'd say, you know, get your GP to refer you to a gynecologist. I mean, unfortunately, there's such a disparity in the way the conventional system and the more integrative system works. And it's so disappointing because there's
I
so
know.
much overlap, and there's so much we can do to support the conventional system, you know, with, you know, a much more detailed analysis and looking at patients in much more detail and supporting them to get into a better state of health. It takes time and energy and dedication to really support the patient in this way, because we're not, you know, it's much more rewarding even as a doctor, because you're looking at, it's like a puzzle, you know, you're a detective. What is causing this woman in front of you? What's causing her symptoms? Forget everybody else, it's not a textbook. You know, what is this woman's particular issues and problems, you know, and dealing with everything on a much more individual, detailed way, using, you know, cutting edge science, scientific testing, which we can do with the gut test, with the Dutch test, looking at their blood results, and then working with them in a much more holistic way, looking at all the different factors that are influencing their endometriosis. And by dealing with all of those factors, we can get them feeling much better. And
no, I
actually,
think
when you're dealing with all of those individual factors, you're also supporting their health in many other different aspects of their well-being. So we know that it's inflammation that predisposes people to chronic disease. So if you're helping someone decrease inflammation, you're going to be helping their endometriosis, but you're also going to be helping their general well-being. So people just generally feel better. You know, when a patient is heard and supported, and you've got all aspects of their narrative on the table, they automatically relax because they feel safe. They think, oh,
Yeah, it's
someone's
true.
taking me seriously. Someone's bothered to listen to me for 75 minutes. No, most people have never had a consultation that long. They're like, I've never had a doctor talk to me about all of that stuff. You know, you talk about their trauma history. Most people never even associate their trauma history
No,
with
no.
their hormones and their nervous system.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that was even to me, that was a little bit of a surprise when you said when you talked about trauma, because you don't automatically think of
You
that. But
don't.
actually, it does have a huge impact on your entire system, your
It does.
entire
It does.
biological
We
system.
know that, children who've experienced ACEs or adverse childhood events, that's what that stands for, have a much higher rate of disease morbidity in adult life. There's a total correlation. So inevitably, endometriosis is, one of those gynecological conditions that, lots of women experience. And it really is debilitating. So, it's really important to know what can we do. And so usually once I've, assessed what are the driving factors of someone's endometriosis, there's so many different ways that we will then tackle that in terms of treatment. So one of the major things is we put people on an anti-inflammatory diet. So they've got to avoid alcohol, caffeine, refined and processed foods. Avoid dairy is very inflammatory for women with endometriosis. So avoid dairy, sugar, red meat, and promote them eating good lean proteins, oily fish, a wide variety of colorful fruit and vegetables, cruciferous vegetables. They are lifesavers when it comes to balancing your hormones. So two portions of cruciferous vegetables, which are
That's
things
your
like
cabbage and your broccoli and
broccoli,
things like that.
cabbage, kale, radish, rockets, broccoli sprouts, those things really help the body clear estrogen from the system. They're very,
Fantastic.
they've got these compounds in them called sulforaphanes, which help clear estrogen from the body. We address micronutrient deficiencies, so things like zinc, B vitamins, magnesium, vitamin D, vitamin C and vitamin E are antioxidants. Again, they're very helpful. We put people on probiotics. We look at people's omega-3, omega-6 ratio. So omega-3 are the fish oils. So they're the fatty acids that are the anti-inflammatory fatty acids. So they're found in largely in oily fish, but you can find them in avocados, nuts, and seeds. Omega-6 is an inflammatory fat, and essentially it's found in fried foods and processed foods. So in the days of old, when we ate loads of unprocessed foods and lots of fish, we have higher levels of omega-3 and lower levels of omega-6. But in our modern diet, people are not having a lot of omega-3, which are the good guys, and they're having a lot of omega-6. So their ratio of omega-3 and omega-6 is skewed, and that means that they are more pro-inflammatory. So we want to bring people out of that pro-inflammatory state. Oily fish a couple of times a week, and good quality omega-3 fish oils, or you can get vegetarian ones these days, will also help that inflammatory ratio.
That's well. That is fantastic, and I'm very sorry to say we're coming to the end. I have learned so much about endometriosis that I did not know, and I'm sure that so many women listening to this will find it a real eye-opener. And I love the fact that you're looking at a holistic way of dealing with this. Inflammation, everything pretty much seems to be down to inflammation, doesn't it? So,
Yeah, inflammation is a big driver of chronic disease,
yeah,
really.
it
And our
is.
modern lifestyles make us much more prone to being inflamed. You know, I mean, number one, processed food has got a lot of inflammatory chemicals in it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's a horrible thing. It's really horrible. So thank you so much for all the work that you
You're
do.
welcome. Come and see us, at clinic. And there are, the, you know, the, I mean, there's so much more that we could have talked about today in terms of,
I know,
the
we could talk forever.
hormonal support we can give people, the supplements specifically that we can give people that are, that are anti-inflammatory. You know, there's so much we can do. There's a lot of adaptogens and herbal things that we can use. So we can really tailor, a personalized treatment plan to each individual woman
Great.
and I mean, it's something that gives me a lot of satisfaction to get people into a much better place.
I love it. Thank you so much. Yes, and is there a website that people can go to
Yes,
find
they
out
can
more?
come onto the Marion Gluck Clinic website, which is www.mariongluckclinic.com.
Lovely.
You can just look up the Marion Gluck Clinic. We're a very large, well-known clinic. We've got 10 doctors working for us, and we'd be very happy to help people, with a much more integrative approach to endometriosis. And it definitely is something that can be massively improved.
I love that. Thank you so much for all the work
You're
that you're
welcome.
doing.
You're welcome. Take care.
Well, I've definitely learned a lot more about endometriosis and how we can deal with it holistically. Hopefully, you did too. So much great information there from Dr. Ghazala that we've no time for anything else today. You can find out more about me and my work at my website, thepracticalalchemist.uk, and do check out my YouTube channel, Alternatively Speaking. For now, though, thank you so much for listening. Such an important topic today. Join me next time for more great guests and more practical alchemy. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.